You are listening to Covenant Dies Radio, helping you in your journey to stay pure online. Today we are playing our conversation with James and Carolyn Cordry. 9.5 years into their marriage, James confessed his struggle with pornography to Carolyn. Now many years after this, they look back on how God brought them through that crisis, bringing healing to their relationship and to their hearts.
And then he proceeded to confess to me that he had been looking at pornography and seeking it out and going and buying material or trying to look at it, you know, on our computer.
I was really scared for the first time about what I had been doing. The exposure really grabbed me by the throat.
I felt like being honest about my feelings and the hurt that I was experiencing really caused him to pause and consider it.
I felt desperate. I felt like I have to change no matter what it takes.
How long have you and Carolyn been married?
We are about to celebrate 19 years in May.
19. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's incredible. That's great. Well, I really, really enjoyed listening to your story. You guys spoke at your church last summer about this crisis event that came into your lives and the fallout from that, and then the way God used that to bring restoration and to now encourage other people. And I want to give you guys a chance to tell it here today. Carolyn, 9.5 years into your marriage, you discovered something that James struggled with. Why don't you talk about how you discovered that and what you discovered?
Well, what I discovered was that James was addicted to pornography, and how it came about. So I was talking with a friend of mine who was relating to me that their pastor once a year or so would speak specifically about pornography at their church, and that every time they would go to church and hear this sermon, her husband would turn to her in the car afterwards and tell her, you know, I just want you to know, since the day we've been married, I have never looked at any of that. And when I heard that, I thought, oh, I really, really want to hear that too. Because it is so loving and reassuring on his part and honoring. James was packing for a business trip, and we were in our bedroom, and I was sitting there talking to him, and I told him about my friend and what I wanted, you know, I wanted to hear the same thing. And he just turned and looked at me, you know, and all the color just kind of fell out of his face. He had to sit down, and he's like, I wish I could tell you that was true, but it's not. And you know, I just really couldn't believe what I was hearing. And then he proceeded to confess to me that he had been looking at pornography and seeking it out and going and buying material or trying to look at it, you know, on our computer. So it was a big, big shock to me.
And you didn't know anything about this prior to that? That didn't occur to you?
No, nothing. I had tried to bring up the conversation with him, and he was always evasive with me. One, and two, he's told me since he was very careful. I usually do our bills, so I look over, you know, statements and everything, and he was always very careful to use cash, so he was never caught. And I'm a nurse, and I work, you know, sometimes work off hours, so he would do that if I was at work, that kind of thing at night, and I would call home, talk to him, but he was always very vague, so that was sort of my second clue in hindsight that, you know, here's this vague, what are you doing tonight? Oh, you know, a little this, a little that. Never a very specific, direct answer.
Right.
So, no, I had no idea.
And so you're facing, at this point, when this happens, you're facing not just the shock that your husband's really wrapped up in pornography, but you're also facing now the double sin of this hiding it. And so how did all this make you feel?
Initially, I was shocked, really sad and angry. The next few days, I felt a real mixture of fear and sorrow. I'm sorry, not fear and sorrow, but anger and sorrow. And I was really, really angry at him. And I just felt so deceived. You know, that one of the things that we had always talked about when we got married was how we were going to marry our best friend. And you don't treat your best friend like that. And so I was very angry, very, very sad. And just as a woman, I really felt disgusted. Like, the whole thought of you know, here is this person who had been looking at another woman or women and wanting them, and yet then he would turn to me and supposedly want me. It just really, I couldn't wrap my mind around that. I didn't understand how one could do that. And it just made me feel gross physically and really sad. And then as far as my relationship with God went, I was really hurt and disappointed because I was a Christian and I had really sought to marry a believer who was walking with God and really felt that I had. And in part, I felt like God had let me down because of what had been going on in my marriage and I hadn't known this.
Absolutely. Well, James, let's bring you in here. What was going through your mind at this point? The truth is out. You're facing, you know, this uncertainty of what's going to happen. What's going on in this waiting period before there were any sort of signs of reconciliation or any sort of signs of hope?
Well, I was really scared for the first time about what I had been doing. And the exposure really grabbed me by the throat. I didn't want my marriage to end, and I didn't want to get a divorce or anything like that, but it felt like my whole way of living and coping was really crashing in on me, and that's because I had been living a double life. So there really wasn't just one conversation that night. That was the first of several conversations. When I got back from the business trip, we had probably over the course of that next week many long conversations each night about the full extent of what I had been doing and for how long. And that was very painful to admit. I really didn't know what the future held for our marriage. And Carolyn did not shield her anger, did not shield me from her anger. And so I was bearing the brunt of that. And I think looking back that was actually a blessing in disguise, that God was allowing me to see the damage I had caused her. And I needed to see that in right up front, because sin does affect the body. And I have brought death into my marriage for 9.5 years.
Prior to this full confession, as you're relaying the details to Carolyn about these things, was this the first time you had relayed this information to anyone?
I had confessed little bits and pieces throughout, basically starting in college when I was a young believer in college, and I had started kind of dealing with the whole idea of what are you supposed to do with this area of lust and pornography. And so I had some relationships where I could have accountability, and I would confess to some guys. But as I got out of college and we got married, I didn't have those same relationships as strongly as I had them in college. So the confession was hit or miss, and the men that I had found to have accountability with, we were all in sort of the same boat of knowing that we needed accountability, but sort of afraid to be that honest with each other. And so we didn't always ask direct questions, nor did we always tell the full truth about what we were doing. And that became sort of a pattern of relating. It was a quasi form of accountability over the years. And in the first few months of our marriage, I had actually looked at pornography magazine and was so upset about it as a new husband that I actually confessed it to Carolyn voluntarily. And we were both very upset about that. And it was a very awkward bit of time in our marriage. And instead of that leading to change, it actually made me more resolved to live a secret that I knew, well, I don't think I can handle admitting that again to her. So feeling like I really didn't know how to change that, I thought I would just sort of not let it get out of control, but also I wouldn't talk about it very much with her, which is one of the reasons for my vagueness and being evasive when she would try to talk to me about it.
And let's talk about when were the first rays of hope that things were going to be okay. Carolyn, maybe you can answer that.
You know, I didn't hide my anger from him. I didn't walk around cursing at him and yelling at him. It wasn't that kind of thing. But, you know, I did things like turning all our pictures over in the house, and I just didn't want to see him. I just felt like everything had been a lie. And I didn't want to be reminded of things in the past that had seemed so good, but yet it turns out that they were actually tainted. And I really, really was seeking in my times with God, I was really seeking his mercy and really looking for God's love for me. And while I was doing that, I felt like God was also reminding me that James needed mercy, that I wasn't any more deserving of mercy and forgiveness than James was. I also had some good women friends who, when I told them, they also knew James. None of them reacted with, you know, a vitriol. Like they didn't let me off the hook. I had this one friend who was asking me if I was considering divorce, and I said, "Well, I'm not really sure." And she was like, she was challenging me on whether that was grounds for something like that or not, and telling me what she thought. But I really felt like God was really, really convicting me over my view of. Basically, I think I had this sense of self-righteousness that, I don't know, I in my thinking over being a Christian for a long time, that maybe now I was righteous instead of it all being Jesus' righteousness. And then also as far as steps go, James might speak more to this. He also took some steps where he really put himself out there in a consistent way to be accountable.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, actually,
yeah.
Was how did he regain your trust?
We went to the counselor to speak to him, the two of us, and he started seeing him on a regular basis, and he had to meet him. He's a good, almost an hour away from our house, but he made the commitment. So he would get up at, 4:30 in the morning to drive to go see this guy at 5 or 5:30 in the morning so that he could get back to work on time. So he did that consistently for months. He also, this counselor also hooked James up with a Bible study in our city that dealt specifically with these issues. It was a ministry run from a church that deals specifically with these issues. And so he consistently started going to that. He also, he'd called his brother and told him what was going on. And his brother is a believer. And so he made a commitment with his brother that he would call him every evening, just for 15 or 20 minutes or so. And they would just talk about the day and what the day had been like. So in seeing those things, I think that really helped me see that James was desperate and he was serious about changing. And we also just kept talking. He became more open and more vulnerable in what he would share with me as he was growing and learning about, why he was doing these things. He would share those reasons with me. And so I think that just really helped to rebuild trust, in addition to me having to learn some good lessons about mercy and forgiveness.
Absolutely. And James, what has Carolyn done in the midst of all of this? What did she start doing that actually really helped you in your struggle?
There was a point at which I can still remember. It was about, it was about 9 or 10 months after the first conversation, kind of like the moment there where everything came out, where it clicked for me that she was my ally now in this. There were little things that would happen leading up to that where I would see her heart turning a little bit towards me. One, about 3 or 4 months after the initial conversation, we had some worship music actually playing in the kitchen, and a song came on, and as I was walking into the kitchen, normally I would walk into a room and she would walk out of the room because she didn't want to be in the room with me. But this time she stayed in the room and she actually reached out her hand and offered to dance with me to this worship song. And I remember that, one, I just completely fell apart in that moment and started crying like a child because it was this tender thing that really, to me, was very hopeful. And I thought, I think we're going to be okay. But it was also something I understood that it wasn't going to turn around right away either. I had done some very terrible things and hurt her in the deepest way. I felt desperate. I felt like I have to change no matter what it takes. And I just committed myself to that rather than how is she responding to me today. And through those things, the counselor, the small group, my older brother, God really started to get into the deeper places to help me understand how did I get here and why was pornography, why did it develop into an addiction for me? And as that happened, she saw that I was committing myself to that process, and that helped her. And then she began to warm to me. So there were a lot of things going on in that first 9 months or so leading up to a point where it was now clear to me, like, we are on the same team about this. And that was a very powerful moment.
Carolyn, if you could, even right now, let's say a woman in your church came to you and confessed that her marriage was struggling through the same kind of crisis of truth, that there's been the same sort of discovery. She feels like her world's absolutely shattered by this. And other than being able to relay your own story, if you could give her one bit of advice about what to do in that moment, about what to do in the midst of that crisis, what would it be?
Just one, huh? I feel kind of funny saying this because it doesn't seem like the loving thing to say.
Okay.
Because I don't think it's the whole picture.
Sure.
I would say own how you feel and express how you feel completely to your husband. And don't try to sugarcoat it or, you know, soften it. I mean, he's a man, and he needs to hear what he has done and the consequences of his actions and how it feels to you as his wife. And I don't think that at all you leave it there. But I really felt like God spoke to me in those first few days about his anger over this whole area in people's lives and the sin in general, and how, and yet I don't at all think that we're supposed to sin, you know, sin in our anger. But I felt like letting James know how wrong this was. That's what I did first. I felt like being honest about my feelings and the hurt that I was experiencing really caused him to pause and consider it. I didn't leave it there, and I think that a woman shouldn't leave it there. I do think that God calls us to forgive people who sin against us regardless of, you know, how the other person is acting. But I couldn't give cheap forgiveness in that moment. It wouldn't have worked. It wouldn't have made a change in my heart, and it wouldn't have made a change in James' heart. So I needed to own all that I was feeling, and I felt like he needed to listen to how I was feeling. And I didn't chase him around and berate him. It wasn't that kind of a situation, but it was, you know, the kids are in bed, we're sitting down to talk, this is how I feel. We're not called to a false forgiveness.
Yeah, there's a big difference, I think, between
treating
sin as if it's nothing and forgiveness. Because forgiveness says, this is a wrong. This is a this has been a wrong. You've wronged God, you've wronged me, you have done things that have been condemnable, but I give you grace anyway. I choose to not make this something where I'm going to retaliate, I'm going to seek some kind of, you know, retribution, or I'm going to seek to get vengeance or whatever. That is the choice of forgiveness. And it's different than, well, you know, you sin, we all sin, I'm just going to kind of slough this off and just kind of brush it aside. Because that doesn't treat sin with the seriousness in which it needs to be treated. So I agree. That's totally good. That's good. And James, if you were sitting across from the husband, what would you say?
I've talked to a lot of guys since, and the thing that I probably find myself saying the most is you need to commit yourself to change whatever it takes. So many guys are nonchalant about this. They don't have a sense of desperation, and this can't go on, and I need to make radical changes. I also would say to them, healing is available for your heart, and freedom is something that is there for having if you will commit yourself to the journey of walking out of this and treating it with the seriousness it deserves.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I know there's probably women listening right now who that's their situation. There's an acknowledgement that this sin is going on in their marriage, and yet their husbands are not treating it with the seriousness that it deserves. And so these women feel ultimately trapped because they want to honor God in their commitments. They want to honor God in their marriages. But there's this fundamental lack of seriousness going on in terms of how this sin is ripping the hearts of their husbands away from them. But other than the crisis of truth, what would you say was the big difference in your heart that allowed for such a sense of importance about this? I need to treat this with seriousness. What was it?
As I look back on it, in hindsight, I saw that God had sort of been preparing this, a little ambush for me. And one of the things that I had done is I had frequented some adult bookstores. And I was in this one bookstore, was finding myself really restless while I was there and very agitated. And I wasn't even able to enjoy the thing I had snuck away to enjoy. And that was starting to be a more consistent pattern. Anytime I would try to look at pornographic material, it would just be fraught with this tension and a dissatisfaction on top of a fear that I was going to get caught, even though probably wasn't going to get caught in that instance. One of the things that I think started to really tip the scales decisively and made me scared about, you know, a short time before the actual conversation was I had gone to this bookstore. I was experiencing the same sort of agitation, and I had this sense like, I've got to get out of here. I kind of hurried myself out the door, and when I got to my car wouldn't start. and this was my great nightmare. As a guy, you know, doing this double life thing, that was my great nightmare, coming to reality. And I'm not particularly knowledgeable about cars, so the first thing that occurs to me is, well, get a jump. And it turns out that the parking lot's packed and this adult bookstore happened to be packed with people. So I do essentially the thing you're not supposed to do in this kind of unwritten code in these places. I go back in and I go up to the front of the store and I turn around and I face the people who are in there shopping. And I say, can anybody give me a jump? The stares that I got back were unbelievable. They really couldn't believe I was talking to them. And as I'm standing there, and of course nobody's responding, I say, really, anybody, just a jump, you know, and no help. And I said to them, I looked at them with this pleading look, and I said, you don't understand. I can't be here. And they all immediately looked down at the floor. They didn't want to have anything to do with me. So I go back out to my car. And so I sit in my car, and I'm really starting to panic now because I don't have any idea what I'm going to do. I look down, and I see that the car, and I was in such a hurry, apparently, to get into this store that I never put the car in park. And the car won't start unless it's in park.
Right.
So I quickly shifted into park. I started up. I hear the sweet sound of my engine turning over, and I peel out of this parking lot and you know, I'm speeding down the highway to get out of there. And I remember just being freaked out in that moment about the whole experience. And I see now that God was just chipping away, getting my heart ready for a moment when he would step right in. And because there was desperation in that moment and I was really scared, I remember God just saying to me, like, this is your only way out. You've got to come clean. I can get you out of this, but you're going to have to just follow me. God met me in my desperation.
You have been listening to James and Carolyn Cordry on Covenant Eyes Radio. James is a leader of worship at Blue Root Vineyard in Pennsylvania. James is also launching a movement to help men's hearts with regard to pornography addiction. Read more on James's blog, Dangerous, Passionate, Alive, Free. You can find it at essentialrisk.wordpress.com. I am your host, Luke Gilkerson. Hear more Covenant Eyes podcasts on iTunes or the Covenant Eyes blog, Breaking Free, at covenanteyes.com/blog.